Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. We have a very special episode for you tonight. We're very excited about this. I'm Eric. If you've never listened to the show before, hopefully this episode may be a good one for some new people to jump in on. I've got Chris with me tonight. Chris, how you doing?
I am fantastic.
All right. Unfortunately, we don't have Lou with us tonight, but that's okay. We have someone filling in for him who's much more interesting, and I'm sure I'll catch hell for that later, but that's okay. You know, we talk a lot on this show about movies, television, and a lot about science fiction, but we've never really gotten into books that much, and we really felt compelled this time around to bring in a particular author to chat with us on Random Chatter, and I'm very happy to introduce Blake Crouch, the author of the Wayward Pines series, and most recently, a few weeks ago, in fact, Dark Matter. Blake, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I got to tell you, it is an honor to have you on the show. I know I am a big fan of books where you can't see what's coming. And then when you do hit kind of the pivotal moment in the book, it completely changes your view of everything that's going on with the story. And we see so many stories where that happens very late in the books. And both with the Wayward Pines series and Dark Matter, that happens earlier on, and I found that really fascinating. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about Dark Matter, which is your latest novel. We're also going to talk a little bit about Wayward Pines, for which you're probably best known. It's a trilogy of books for which there was a television series that I believe season two just wrapped up.
Season two just finished a couple weeks ago on July 27th.
And I know you've written some other novels, too. I'm a little ashamed to say that I am a relatively new Blake Crouch fan. I've not read any of your earlier stuff. I know Desert Places, was that your first novel?
That was my first novel.
Okay.
A very dark little thing published in 2004. And a little bit of my homage to Thomas Harris, The Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, that sort of a vibe.
Interesting.
Okay.
So you've been releasing novels. It looks like I'm cheating. I'm going to your Wikipedia page here. I'm sorry, but it looks like almost annually for a while now, with just a little gap between Locked Doors and Abandon.
Yeah. Well, and the biggest gap has been between The Last Town and Dark Matter, 2 years.
Okay. It says here Locked Doors 2005 and Abandon was 2009.
Wait, now I'm looking at Wikipedia, and I don't want to blow anyone's mind, but it's not a full accurate picture of my...
excellent. See, this is why we're happy to have you on the show. You can clear up this, you know, this intraweb nonsense that's out there. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions real quick before we get into your content. How did you get started in writing?
I got started really young. I have a younger brother who I am 6 years older than. And I would try to scare him at night by telling him really scary bedtime stories. And at first he didn't like them. And then he kind of wanted me to keep telling scary stories. And then he really wanted me to try to scare him. And so I did. And I kept telling this one story over and over. It's called The Castle on the Hill. And it was about a boy who lives in a neighborhood in the shadow of a hill with this very spooky castle with some clearly mad scientist things going on inside. And the boy gets kidnapped in the middle of the night. And I kept telling the story over and over. And then finally, I decided I wanted to write it down. And that was the first piece of writing I ever did.
Nice.
That's cool.
And did it get published?
No, I was 10 years old at the time.
Oh, okay. I didn't know when you got around to writing it.
I literally printed it on a dot matrix printer.
Wow. That's awesome. All right.
Yeah.
So
I did that, and then I wrote short fiction in middle school, a string of very, very bad poetry in high school. I started my first novel my senior year of high school, finished it when I got into college, and that was rejected because it was a big, sprawling family saga that just was a mess. But it led me into writing my next book, which was Desert Places.
Awesome.
That's neat.
Now, again, we're familiar with your work from about 2012 on with the Wayward Pines series, which consists of Pines, Wayward, and The Last Town. Your previous books, are they also science fiction? Or you mentioned you kind of like telling scarier stories. Where did those kind of fall in the genre?
Yeah, like Desert Places, Locked Doors, those were more on the thriller horror side of the pie.
Okay.
And then in 2009, I published a book called Abandon, which still had a good dose of horror, but it was historical. It wasn't quite as violent. It had a bigger idea. It's about a mining town in 1893 Colorado that vanishes on Christmas Day, and a present day group that goes and tries to find out what happened to them and basically suffers the same fate. That was the first, you know, step into more commercial writing that I did. And then I wrote a book called Snowbound that followed that and was a little more commercial. And the first, probably, I would say, successful thing I wrote was a book called Run, which I self-published actually in 2011. It's about a family on the run during an American genocide. I basically took the events that happened in a place like Rwanda and set them in America to see what would happen. And after Run, I dove into this book called Pines.
Now, the stuff before Run, was that also self-published, or were those through?
No, my first four books were published through St. Martin's Press. They were traditionally published. They did okay. They didn't do great. And I was in the right place at the right time as self-publishing was becoming a viable option. And as the Kindle emerged and as the Kindle platform was available to anyone, and I had the rights back to some of my early novels, I put those up and I released Run, and it became a big hit digitally. And so I was a traditionally published author. Then I was a self-published author. Then after Run, I went and started working with Amazon Publishing for the Wayward Pines trilogy. So they are sort of in between self-publishing and traditional publishing. I mean, it's basically a publishing company that has all the power of Amazon, but you're exclusive to Amazon with the books that you publish there. Hmm. And then with Dark Matter, I went back on the success of Wayward Pines to traditional publishing.
So let me ask you about that a little bit. I know we've talked before to Michael Stackpole, who also kind of migrated into self-publishing a little bit and ebooks and kind of promulgated that when it was still very early on. What has your experience been with self-publishing and the digital distribution as opposed to the more traditional methods? Do you have one that you prefer over the other, or is it just a matter of kind of working in both directions, or how does that work from behind the scenes?
I like doing all of it.
Okay.
So Crown, which is a imprint of Random House, is publishing Dark Matter, publishing it in a very big way.
Okay.
I still work with Amazon Publishing. I mean, Wayward Pines season 2 just finished, and those books were still very much being sold and promoted and marketed, and that's being published by Amazon Publishing. Amazon Publishing will also bring out the tie-in edition of my new TV show that comes out in November. And I still have seven or eight pieces of work that I own the rights to and continue to self-publish, just because I want to keep my finger on the pulse of all options. Because what I've learned coming up over the last, 12 years of publishing is that it's always changing. You just have to be flexible and nimble, because if you're not, you get locked into one system and just can be left in the dust in literally the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
So all of the books that you wrote previously are still available, right?
Everything I've written that I actually want people to read is available.
That's right. Got to be convenient. No, I don't like that one. We're not going to get that one out there.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's some early ones that I wouldn't mind a do-over on, but I feel like, they're still my kids and I love them, and they should have an audience such as it exists for them.
Cool. All right. A couple of questions about Wayward Pines. This was, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your first trilogy. This is your first set of novels tied together, correct?
Well, Desert Places and Locked Doors are connected.
Okay.
It wasn't the first series I'd written.
All right. Is there, in your perspective personally as an author, do you have a preference between working in a series or standalone novels? Is one easier than the other? Are there different techniques that you have to use as you're going throughout the writing process?
When I'm writing a standalone, I really wish I was writing a series. When I'm writing a series, I really wish I was writing a standalone.
Okay.
The problem with series is that you just get fatigued. By the end of Wayward Pines, I felt like I couldn't escape Wayward Pines. I had written these books and worked on this TV show for 5 or 6 years. And I was like, if I have to do another Wayward Pines book, I'm going to blow my brains out. And so Dark Matters is standalone. The next book that I write will be a standalone. And I'm excited about that. Now, the hard thing with standalones is that you got to come up with a new idea every time out.
Right.
And when you set yourself a bar, like I set myself, which is that I want to blow people's minds, it takes a long time to find that right idea.
With the Wayward Pine series, my understanding is that it was picked up for the television series while you were still in the process of writing the books, right? I mean, it was picked up in 2013?
Well, it was actually, we sold it in 2012. It was announced in 2013. We actually sold it. Well, that's not true. The pilot script for Pines was written and finished right before Pines was published.
Oh, wow.
Attached M. Night Shyamalan to direct the pilot and be an executive producer. And that was all right as the book was publishing. And that was just the first book. So I was still figuring out what the world was and what books 2 and 3 would be as we were figuring out what the show was going to be. So it was a very rare instance of writing books as a show was also being made. I mean, there were days that I would spend the first half of the day writing the books, writing on a book for Wayward Pines, and then writing a script on the same scenes.
Wow. Hmm. Okay. So that was my next question, actually. Your personal level of involvement with the television series, you were actually writing the scripts for the episodes?
I wrote 3 of them.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So it's, you know, one of the things as we were watching this series as season 1 was airing, I found it kind of interesting that about the first 5 episodes or so were the first book. And then about the next 3 and a half episodes were the second book. And then it seemed like the last town got almost crammed into that final episode.
It did.
Did that have to do with the whole issue we're talking about here with the process of the books being written at the same time as the TV series, or was that intentional with the television series?
No, it was a little bit of that. It was also, look, I mean, TV just churns through plot. Like, as True. The first episode is the first half of Pines. I mean, it just tears through plot. So we also really thought we were just making a 1-season event series.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we wanted to use everything we could. We were like, hey, we'll just use all of this because we're not coming back to do another series.
Right.
And, you know, it put us in a interesting spot when we got a season 2 order and had to come up with new things.
Yeah.
But we did pull 2 things out of the books for season 2 that were never really used, and that was the character of Hassler coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of Margaret the Abbey from Wayward Pines, or from Wayward, rather. She mm-hmm. was, a thing that did not make it into the first season. I was really happy that we got to play with her because I thought she was one of the stronger elements of season 2.
Yeah.
And the end of season 2, I think, echoes the way the trilogy ends, although it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. So season 2, I know a lot of people are under the perception based on just comparing the television series to the novels that you must not have had any involvement with season 2 and it was the studio just picking it up and moving forward with it and coming up with their own stories. Is that true, or did you actually have involvement with the creation of the story for the second season?
No. So this is what happened. So we made Wayward Pines and all the episodes were done and in the can a year before it premiered. And the production, without getting into details, was challenging. And we thought, all right, well, that was great. We'll never go back to this town again. But then it was a big hit, and audiences and critics loved it, and Fox wanted to do another season. And so I went out to Knight's house in Philadelphia, and we sat down for several days. And first we just kind of asked each other, I mean, is this something we should do? Do we even want to and think we should continue the story?
Right.
And we said, let's do this. Let's have a few days to brainstorm. And if we like what we come out with at the end of it, then we'll do this. And he and I, and this was last summer, came up with a 3-season arc of what the entire show would be. And we loved it. We thought this is something that's not been done before. And so, you know, we went to Fox and said, look, we want to continue, and we have a very solid structure that takes this entire series to a pretty compelling finale. So that's the way that happened.
Okay.
So I've got to ask, you said earlier that you were tired of the Pines books. When you had to come up with a completely different story for season two, did you ever feel any kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say regret, but were you ever a little irritated that you had to go back to the universe that you created?
No, it was actually fun to do it in this way because I didn't have to write any of these scripts. We hired writers, hired a new showrunner, and I just got to basically break the big goalpost moments of season two and kind of steer the ship in a very broad sense, which is fun because, you know, I mean, I love the world of Wayward Pines. I just don't want to write any more books in it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so that brings up kind of another point here. Before we move into Dark Matter, there are, I just discovered this fairly recently. I haven't had a chance to read any of them yet, but there are some spinoff books based in the Wayward Pines world.
Yeah.
You kind of open that up to other authors now.
Amazon Publishing invented this new program, which is essentially commercialized fan fiction. I mean, fan fiction has always been kind of underground, off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
No one's really making any money off of it. It's just fun. Amazon said, let's find a way to commercialize this and to promote it. And they asked me if I wanted to be a part of this. And I thought, you know, I'm always up for experimentation. So I said, sure. And we opened the world up with some very strong parameters. But we opened it up, and I don't know, there's 50 or 60 novellas, novels, short stories that are all based in the world itself. And I kind of love that. I am not precious about my work. I love the idea that I built this sandbox and other people can come and play in it if they want to.
Do you have to approve those as they come in?
I don't want to improve. That's the beauty of fan fiction. If someone wants to write, Wayward Pines on Mars, go for it.
Well, sure. But this is more than just fan fiction, though. This is actually getting distributed by Amazon and people are purchasing this. So
some of them have done very well. And I've had some really amazing writers write some things. F. Paul Wilson wrote a story for this world, which was a huge honor. I'm a huge fan of his. Timothy Zahn wrote a story in Wayward Pines. And I mean, he's done a ton of Star Wars work.
Yeah. Oh, we know Tim. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Tim had written one. I didn't. Now I'm going to feel like an idiot if I have this wrong, but I don't have this in front of me, but didn't your brother write one or something?
He did. Jordan wrote one.
Good. My memory's good then.
He did. And actually I remember when Jordan and I were, first of all, Jordan and I wrote a book together before this, a book called Eerie, which is probably not on the Wikipedia page.
No, it's not. What was it called?
Eerie.
Eerie. Okay.
It's a very interesting take on a haunted house story. But Jordan came on board to write one of these stories for Kindle Worlds, and we talked about this character that I had been kind of obsessed with, which is a guy who his job is to monitor the suspension pods while everyone else is sleeping. And he wakes up every 20 years and checks on things and does all this. And Jordan just knocked it out of the park and wrote this amazing story. So
nice.
I knew that in season two, if we got there, I wanted to incorporate this somehow. So I pitched the idea of this guy, this duster. And of course, that's the Jaiman Hansu character from season two.
Awesome. All right. So your brother, Jordan, is it right?
Yes.
Okay. So those, not that the others are not worth reading or anything, but those especially at least have something that like an actual idea that you had been kind of thinking of, then he took and ran with it. So those kind of have your blessing.
I want to call one more out.
Okay.
And it's the writer Stephen Conkley. And he wrote, Wayward Pines is such a big world. And I had a handful of ideas that if I could live a million lives, I would have written these. And I wasn't just kind of taxed out on this world. But he wrote the story of how the town was built, of what happened once they came out of suspension for the first time, how they drove the abbeys out of the valley, how they erected the fence. And Stephen writes with just such authority about that kind of stuff. And it's probably my favorite of all of the Kindle World stories. And if you see it, it has like 100 customer reviews, like a 4.5-star rating. I mean, people really love it. And it's an amazing addition to the universe.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. I can tell you that as a fan, the fact that there is still more content coming out is awesome, because it's just, you know how it is. Once you find something and you love it, it's kind of a bittersweet thing when it ends. And it's nice to be able to have an ending to the story, and yet there still be other side stories going on in that same world. So,
oh, totally.
That's really exciting. Well, let's move into Dark Matter then. Chris, I'll let you take over here.
All right. So, first of all, what were some of your inspirations on writing Dark Matter, and how familiar are you with the science that's included in it?
So my inspiration, it's kind of this, I guess, the same answer to both questions. I was always fascinated with quantum mechanics, even though I took as few math and science classes as possible in college. I mean, I literally took one math class and you didn't even have to have a calculator. It was like matrix. But I was fascinated with the idea of quantum mechanics. I'm not sure why. And I wanted to use it in some way to write a book, but it's an intimidating field. And I every time I would try to study it, I feel like I would grasp one concept and then totally spin out. It's like the more you try to understand something, the more obscure it becomes.
Yeah.
But I spent like 10 years off and on while I was writing other projects, just reading things that struck my curiosity. And finally, I felt like I had built up enough of a baseline knowledge of the core concepts of quantum mechanics to incorporate them into a thriller.
Okay. So this book was more realistic science fiction than what we see, you know, like something like Star Wars, for example, where it's set in space and it's more of a fantasy. So the world felt really, it felt real, and I personally was able to relate to it, unlike, you know, some other novels. And, you know, the science behind the box that is featured in the book wasn't really an inconceivable concept either. So did you always kind of envision this, you know, realistic setting? Like, you know, was it always set on Earth, and did it always include real science? Or were you ever tempted to maybe introduce this, you know, supernatural or fantastic concept that we really can't imagine?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never really been able to go that far into the supernatural. I mean, there's a part of me that really wants to write something set in space. Every time I like walk right up to the line of doing it, I just can't. I'm not sure if that's who I am as a writer. What I write, I want to have some grounding in possibility. And so for me, when I created this conceit of the box, I wanted it to be plausible. And it's kind of plausible. I mean, look, it's not like I invented multiverse travel. Otherwise, I would have won the Nobel Prize already. but the box works on core concepts that quantum mechanics brings up, which is that when you're in the box, you are in this state of superposition, which means that you are in multiple realities at once. And particles that exist at the subatomic level, we know that they behave this way. We know that they exist in multiple realities at the same time. Theories such as the Schrodinger's cat, the double slit experiment, prove this. But we just don't actually understand how that affects our day-to-day lives. And I came across this really fascinating TED Talk while I was researching dark matter. And this guy named Aaron O'Connell had put a macroscopic object, which is something that's visible to the human eye, in a state of quantum superposition, which means, not to get too technical, but that it was vibrating at different frequencies at the same time. And that might not sound like it has anything to do with our day-to-day lives, but if you scale that up to our world, it suggests that maybe instead of living in a universe, we live in a multiverse where all possible realities are unfolding at every moment, but we don't see them because we are locked into our world line and we can only see the reality that we observe. And I just thought, what if I created something that allowed a man and a woman to observe multiple realities at once? So that was the driving force behind the box.
We should probably point out from this point on in the interview, we may have some, we're going to try to keep them very, very, very minor spoilers for dark matter, but we're going to cover some stuff that's not on the back of the dust cover of the book. So, I one of the things that really impressed me about dark matter was you've got this concept, like you're just talking about quantum physics. Every time I can relate, every time I try to delve into it, you get one thing and you're like, okay, I got it. And you turn the page of the book and it's like a completely different language. You lost everything. You feel like what you just learned, maybe you actually had it wrong. It's really, really heady stuff. And yet with dark matter, you take that as the core concept of what's going on in the book and you present it in a way that's so understandable. And not even so much that we now understand quantum physics per se, but we have everything we need to understand the flow of the story. We don't have to get wrapped up in the specific mechanics of the science of what's going on. And yet you do present enough of that science for those of us who maybe, have a little bit of a knowledge of it to understand that this is based on actual sound physics and actual science. I'm fascinated by your ability as an author to take that and translate it into something that the mainstream readers can actually pick up on and let that carry them through a story without getting confused and lost in it. Was there a challenge in writing it and in the presentation of that and making sure that you don't lose people?
Well, first off, thank you. And yes, that's why it took 10 years of reading this stuff and trying to wrap my head around it. I mean, the biggest challenge was when you're a writer and you do a bunch of research and you get all this knowledge under your belt, you just want to show off to the reader and show them how much you learned. But the truth is the reader doesn't care. The reader just wants an awesome story. So, I guess I probably presented 10% of what I learned in this book. I really stuck to the core concepts. I used the Schrodinger's cat thought experiment as the baseline, as the starting point, the idea that a cat is alive and dead inside of a box until the moment you open it and look inside, and that your observation determines its fate. That was, I tried to just start there and move in baby steps and not lose anyone. And I had the benefit of this brilliant professor at USC named Clifford Johnson. And I sent him all of the passages that had any sort of science going on in them when I finished the book. And I said, would you just let me know your thoughts? And I mean, first, what do you think? Am I crazy? And have I misrepresented any of these core concepts? And he read everything and wrote me back and showed me where I'd maybe, messed up here and there. But I mean, he generally kind of supported the idea, I stayed away from being too specific in terms of what the material the box is made of, but the idea that you have to shut out all external stimuli from impacting the interior of the box, the idea that once inside the box, you have to shut down some part of our brain that triggers wave function collapse, mm-hmm. which in effect kills the superposition. The idea that I do those two things was plausible. I mean,
right.
Again, I don't say exactly how it's done, because if I had, I would be, winning Nobel Prizes instead of just writing books.
That was a really interesting thing about the story was, though, is once you are inside the box yourself, how do you stop yourself from observing yourself?
That's the drug.
Yeah.
That's the drug. The drug shuts down these, and this is where we get into Fudgy, lovely, writerly, poetic
liberties.
Lessons.
Yeah.
You shut down parts of the brain that are responsible for observation. So,
but it worked and it made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So we have a few questions from listeners who we told that we were going to have you on the show, and they submitted some questions. So this one comes from listener Zach. He says, both Pines and Dark Matter start with the main character getting beat up with some degree of memory loss in an incredibly disorienting situation, yet it never feels like you're treading the same territory. Was this something you were conscious of when writing the book? And if so, what did you do to keep each book so individual?
I was conscious of it, yes. I think they're very different books. I think Wayward Pines is... Well, I think what it comes down to is the protagonists themselves couldn't be more different. Ethan Burke is a Secret Service agent who is physically capable, definitely a smart guy, more of a jack of all trades. He comes into this last town on Earth and basically takes over and sees them through the most harrowing several weeks in the life of Wayward Pines. Jason Dessen what makes him special is his brain, is his genius, his problem-solving abilities. I mean, Ethan Burke would kick his ass in about 5 seconds. but yeah, you know, there's something, I think what Zach is probably cluing in on is something I've asked myself many times, which is, what is it about the idea of a main character being faced with a reality that doesn't align with their understanding of the world, because both Ethan and Jason are faced with this, and the notions of identity and who are we and who are we in a place that isn't home. I mean, those are definitely themes that are common to both books. And I'm not sure why. I'm sure it's some sort of deeper subconscious thing I should talk to my therapist about.
You know, it's, you were talking about the protagonist. For me, it was a kind of a reveal, like it was a revelation to me in the book. I won't give any spoilers, but there's a point at which late in the book where the main character is kind of coming to this realization himself about something, and it hit me. Is this really who I should be rooting for?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or
that's a good point.
Should it be somewhere else? And I hate books where I can predict what's going to happen. And I find it a novelty when a book really, truly catches me off guard and I don't know where it's going. And it was at that point where I realized, hey, this author, this guy could take this in any direction here. And I can't say too much because I don't want to give away spoilers or anything, but it was like, wow, I really have no idea, partially because of the nature of the story. This could go off in so many different directions and it would still be okay. And it would still be a satisfying ending, but I really have no idea which direction this is going to go at this point. And
I love to hear that. That's what, as a writer, that's what you strive for. When I'm reading a book, and it happens so rarely, but
yeah,
when I'm reading a book and I don't know where the end is going, there's nothing better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, sometimes you don't know where the end is going and you just don't care anymore.
Right, right.
No, but like plotting that has true surprises.
Yes.
Well,
and in this case,
one of, Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say, in this case, it can go in different directions and still matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that was the cool thing.
Yeah.
I do have one question here from Lou, who is our co-host. He's normally on the show with us, and he couldn't make it tonight. But we got into a discussion about this the other day. And like I said before, and I mean this sincerely, I'm absolutely fascinated with how you were able to take this concept, as complex as quantum physics is, and as confusing as the nature of what's going on in the story is, and make it so that it's not at all difficult to follow. But we did come across one thing that I had one idea of what was happening. Somebody else had a different idea of what was happening. And we realized that we didn't really know exactly what was supposed to be happening with this one aspect of the book. And the good thing about it is it didn't really matter while we were reading it.
Okay.
It wasn't until later on. So don't take this, you know, the wrong way or anything, because we didn't care while we were reading the story. The story moved along and took care of itself. But the box, when Jason goes to a universe and arrives, is the box in the same place where the box was, where it was created, number one? And then number two, kind of attached to that, if he goes to a universe in which he did not create the box, would that box that he arrived in, like, still remain there?
Yes, it does remain there.
Okay. We were trying to figure out if it's like the TARDIS from Doctor Who, where it could be at, like, any particular place, or when it does arrive, is it always in that specific location, regardless of?
I imagine that the box is always in the same geographical location across all multiverses.
Okay.
It is always in, I mean, you know, there's of course some universe where Lake Michigan dried up 100 years ago as a big salt flat.
Right.
But it's always in that space on our globe. And in terms of, and you can go to a universe where he doesn't have to travel to a universe only where he created the box. He can go to any world. It's any world where this collection of matter is arranged in this manner, he can travel to. And I know that sounds super vague, but it kind of plays into the whole, there's a guy named Max Tegmark who has this whole theory of the multiverse and different levels and different layers of multiverses. I mean, there are some, and I didn't take this book this far because it would have felt too supernatural and it would have gotten away from the grounded feeling I wanted. But some people say, you know, there are multiverses where the laws of physics are different from the laws of physics here. Which means you could have floating mountains. You could be on Avatar, you know, the planet Pandora in Avatar. And I was very cognizant writing those sections about wanting to keep it feeling real and as close to something that could happen as possible. But yes, I've gotten several questions about what happens to the box when they leave, and the box does stay behind. And I love the idea of that, because there are some worlds that some version of Jason visits where after he leaves, there's just suddenly a big black box with a door in it sitting in a park, and no one in that world would have any idea why it's there.
Okay. So let me ask you one other question related to that. After he visits the one world with Amanda.
Yeah.
And then he goes back in the box and leaves. Is that box still there?
You mean after he and Amanda go separate ways and he leaves?
Right. Can Amanda go back and the box is there and Amanda could get in the box again?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why that would have been horrible for him to leave if the box wasn't there.
Okay.
Yeah, the box stays behind.
Okay. All right. That's all I got from Lou. Chris, you can go ahead.
All right. So Jared sent in this question. He said, do you have any plans for a sequel or maybe a short story featuring Amanda and what happened to her?
It's actually an interesting idea of following Amanda. I really don't have any plans for a sequel. I kind of feel like I left it all in the field with this book. And I think there's something interesting about leaving the audience wanting just a little bit more. I don't think I will be coming back to Dark Matter. I mean, crazier things have happened, but I think I'm ready to do my next thing.
You know, it's interesting you saying that you want to leave the audience wanting more, because the way Dark Matter ends, it's a very satisfying ending, and yet there is that, like, there is what's the word I'm looking for? There's continuation for those characters beyond the ending of the story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you're curious about what happens, but this story has finished. And
yes.
You do the same thing with Wayward Pines, too, at the end of The Last Town.
That's my favorite ending I've ever written.
That is an incredible ending. We talk about that probably more than any ending of any other book. And it's
I've got more email about that last sentence than anything else.
And it's that sentence that one sentence has so much in it. It's incredible. But yeah, it's weird how you have total resolution for a story. And it's so disappointing sometimes when you get stories that either don't feel fully resolved or wrap everything up so much that you feel like, well, man, that was definitive. Like there couldn't be life after the ending of that, that
because
page.
All the characters are dead.
Right. Exactly. So it's, I don't know. That's just very interesting to me that the way in which you are able to resolve a story completely. So you feel completely satisfied as the consumer of that story. And yet there's that little spark of curiosity at the end where you feel like you want more. And it's not because you didn't get enough, but it's because you're curious.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting balance to have to maintain.
I mean, all of my favorite movies and books go out like that. It's hard. It's a hard balance to strike because sometimes you can think you're doing that, but you're just like leaving in the middle of your third act, and you definitely don't want to do that. Right. But also, you just don't want to outstay your welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's actually one thing that I was telling Eric about this book when I finished reading it, because I got a review copy of this book before anyone else did, and then as soon as I finished it, I had to go tell Eric and all of our friends about how wonderful it was. And how much I enjoyed it. It's not just because I'm talking to you right now. This is probably one of the best books that I've read in a long time and probably will end up being one of my favorites of all time.
Wow.
When it's all said and done. You're welcome.
Thank you.
But I was telling him literally the only thing that I didn't like about this book was that it had to end.
That's always the bittersweet part about books you love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if it hadn't ended, you would have been like, this book is going on too long now. I hate this book. Book meat wall.
Yeah.
So kind of to wrap up here, I know that Sony Pictures recently picked up Dark Matter as a film. So is there anything at all you can tell us about that? I know you're writing the screenplay. Is that correct?
Yeah. I just finished my first draft of the screenplay. So we'll see what happens. It's still super early days. But I spent a fair chunk of time trying to be really thoughtful and figure out what the movie version of this was. What's the movie that I would want to see? It's a hard adaptation because it's not the longest book, but a lot happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you undoubtedly have to, there's no way that Dark Matter is a TV series. Like, it's a big movie. It's just obviously a big movie. And, you have to pare things down. You have to streamline. So it's been a really fun experience. So we'll see what happens. No news to share yet, but fingers crossed.
All right. You mentioned earlier that you have a new TV show in November. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a TV show called Good Behavior. It's based on a handful of novellas I wrote, also not cited on Wikipedia.
Thanks a lot, Wikipedia.
About Letty Dobesh, this character who is my favorite character I've ever written. And it's very different from Wayward Pines and Dark Matter. It's not a high concept thing. There's no speculative element to it. The entire concept of good behavior is this character of Letty. She it's kind of like a female Breaking Bad. She is fresh out of prison when we meet her. She's a meth addict, a junkie, a thief. She has a son she's estranged from. And she's trying to do better, but when she's ripping off rooms in this luxury hotel, her path crosses when she overhears a hitman being hired to kill this guy's wife, and she decides to get involved. And it's very ironic because this hitman may actually be the guy who helps her become the best version of herself. It's played by Michelle Dockery, who plays Lady Mary in Downton Abbey. and it's going to premiere on November 15th on TNT.
Nice.
Cool. I'll have to check that out for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't even know that was coming. Sweet. All right. So, well, we should probably wrap this up, especially since, you know, you agreed to a half hour and we're running way past that. And we apologize for that.
Right. It's been a blast.
We don't want to let you go. That's the thing. Okay. So for the audience members out there, I know some of them have read Wayward Pines, the trilogy, you know, Pines and Wayward and The Last Town. Because when we've discussed it on our show before, they've written in and talked to us about it. And I know that Dark Matter is relatively new, so only some of our audience has actually picked it up yet or made it through that yet. But if we have audience members out there who have gotten through Wayward Pines and Dark Matter, and you had to pick one of your other novels to recommend to them, which one would it be?
I would recommend Run.
Okay. All right.
I'll have to write that down.
Yeah. Yep. That's the next one I'm getting. That's kind of what I was asking the question.
Also, Abandon.
Abandon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading the premise of that.
Eerie. No, I'm just kidding. I was going to recommend all of them.
Just keep going down the list.
I would do Run and Abandon.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, is there anything that you can share with us about where to find you online, websites or blogs, or are you active on Twitter, anything like that?
I am fairly reachable in all forms of social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, through my website. I'm easily findable.
Okay. So what's your website?
BlakeCrouch.com.
Well, that's easy. And your Twitter account?
Blake Crouch one.
Ah, okay. We had to get the one in there. Yeah. See, that's why we want to ask. We don't want the Blake Crouch out there getting the follows. Blake Crouch one is the...
That guy probably hates me.
Or loves you. One of the two. He's probably got more followers than he knows what to do with. All right. Well, Blake, we want to thank you so much for being here on the show with us. It's been a great honor to speak with you. And just on behalf of our audience too, thank you for the content you've put out. These are
definitely
phenomenal books, and you know, Wayward Pines, to be able to see other authors also kind of continuing that on, knowing that there's a film coming for Dark Matter, you've got a new TV series coming in November. This is all just phenomenal news, and so once again, thank you for being on the show, and thank you for the content you've been putting out there for us.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.